Hi, it's Kate Evans here from Books Plus on RN. This woman you're about to hear was one of the most dynamic and reflective people I spoke to over the last year. Petina Gupa is a Zimbabwean fiction writer and international lawyer who now lives in Europe. Her books include Elegy for Easterly and The Book of Memory. She begins here by explaining her education in a country that was changing under her.
I was born in Zambia, and then my parents moved back to Zimbabwe when it was Rhodesia, when I was less than 2 years old. And then I started my primary school in Rhodesia. And then in 1979, when there was some kind of internal settlement, a mixed-race government was formed, and the country was renamed Zimbabwe-Rhodesia. And that had an effect on my education as well. So initially, the Rhodesian schools, or the Rhodesian schools I went to, were very crowded. And we had something called hot seating, which meant that we had to share classrooms. And then in 1979, there seemed prospect of peace and a new beginning. So we were moved schools. And then a year later, proper real independence came to Zimbabwe. And that meant I moved with my parents, with our family. We moved from the township to the suburbs, where I was one of about six or seven black children to integrate a formerly all-white school. So that also obviously had an impact on my education, because now suddenly I was one of 22 children in a classroom, and there were books everywhere. You know, we didn't have books in the township. We didn't have libraries in the township. So it was like moving from a wasteland to paradise, especially for someone like me who was a child who loved books.
What did it mean for your relationship to language, to words themselves?
You know, for the first year, for almost the whole of 1980, I didn't speak because I didn't have English. I didn't have the language.
You spoke Shona?
Yes. My education, my first 2 years of education were in Shona. I knew what English words meant, and I could read them and I could understand them. But my speech wasn't great. I mean, if you don't actually use a language daily, you don't really learn how to speak it properly. So for the first 6 months, I was mute. They thought I was really quiet. And then I picked up English, and I could not stop talking. And I remember I was one of the kids who was sent out of the classroom for talking, usually to myself. And then I spent the rest of my primary school in this school. And then secondary school, I went to a rural mission school called St. Dominic's, where now people were mocking my accent.
Why? You know?
Because I sounded like a roadie. You know, I'd spent, you know, 5 years or so of primary school with white kids, white teachers, and so my accent had completely changed. And so now I had to relearn Shona, because my Shona had been frozen to about grade 2, grade 3, and I was supposed to be doing it at secondary school. So now I had to relearn my original language, and that proved to be really difficult. So again, I was mute, but for different reasons.
So what's the language of your imagination, of your dreams?
I have to say it's English. English is the language that I think in. It's the language that I'm angry in. But I think that the language that I'm funny in is Shona. Yeah.
Humour is really important in Zimbabwe, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think without humour, I don't know where we would be. It's a bizarre situation that one of the worst economies in the world, with one of the longest serving presidents, and the oldest president in the world, our economy has collapsed to an extent where it's almost non-existent. Formal unemployment is at 80%, and yet we manage to laugh. In many ways, I think we're actually some of the funniest people in the world. I think when you come to such a situation, you really have two options. You can just collapse in your misery, or you can find some humor in your circumstances. And I think that's what Zimbabweans, you know, I think it's in our nature to laugh at our misery and our circumstances.
The schoolroom that you described that was full of books and that had the Queen Victoria Library down the road, is that still the case for girls like you in Zimbabwe? Do they have access to books and stories in the way that you did?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, I have to emphasize that all these schools I'm talking about, they were not elite schools by any means. The school I moved to, Alfred Beit School in Maybrain, was just an ordinary government school for sort of like lower middle class white kids. That's the school I moved to. So what has happened to these schools is that they have become the township schools. I wrote an essay where I went back to my old schools to revisit them after, you know, 20-something years. And I found that Chambira School, which was my first primary school in Glenora, was exactly the same as Alfred Beit School. the suburb school. They have more than 50 kids in a classroom. They have no libraries anymore. And the Queen Victoria Memorial Library, which is now called the Harare City Library, the branch in Maybrain, is full of large print books, large print Agatha Christie's. And it's collapsed completely. So that culture of reading that we had as children simply isn't there for the children who are in school today.
So what made you a storyteller? What made you want to be a writer?
I think it was about the age of 11 when I realized that I could actually tell the kind of stories that I was reading. One of my favorite books was Ballet Shoes by Noah Streatfeild. And I loved anything with horses and ballet, anything with dogs. I even had an imaginary dog because my parents didn't like dogs, so I made up a dog in my mind. He was an English Cocker Spaniel called Schmookie. So I had an imaginary dog. I even had an imaginary horse at one point. I really had a very strange sort of imaginary childhood of a child in England in the 1950s. And I really thought that, you know, if I went to England, I would go to the Yorkshire Moors and hunt German spies with the Lone Pine Fife, you know, because I also love the Malcolm Servo books. And so I think it was at a time, I was about 11 or so, when I realized that I could actually enter any world I wanted to. And I could actually enter it with my own words. And that's when I started to write my very first book, if I can call it that. And Miles from Faber is here. I hope they offer me a contract to realize my long-held dream to write this book. It was called Return to Planet Earth, with an exclamation mark in the title. And it was about a penal colony that had been established on Mars. And then one day, all the prisoners got together and built a rocket to return to planet Earth. And then we had a gardener who used to see me scribbling and see all these bits of paper. And of course, he was very offended to see so much paper in the garden. So he gathered everything together and he made a bonfire of my writing. That was one of the most gut-wrenching moments of my childhood. And my parents didn't see what the big deal was. Because of course, for them, you know, as for many newly middle-class black parents, education was about, you know, entering a profession.
And you did. You became a lawyer.
I became a lawyer, yeah.
What did that do to your relationship to language? Because law is often very precise with what words mean and what implications they have.
You know, I was a reluctant lawyer initially because I'd wanted to be a writer, but nobody knew any writers. You know, the writers were dead white people as far as, you know, my family was concerned. So who actually was a writer? The only writer was maybe Dambudzo Marechera, who was this crazy guy who slept in the streets, and nobody wanted me to be a homeless person with dreadlocks. So this idea of being a writer just wasn't something that my teachers or my parents encouraged. And so the combination I did at A-levels, the arts as they were called, meant that I could either be an accountant or a lawyer. So really, for me, law seemed like the natural choice. So I became a lawyer, and I found eventually that I really did enjoy my legal studies. But what, you know, being a lawyer has done to my writing, I think I'm quite precise in my writing. That legal precision, I think, has sort of found its way into my writing. And I like clarity. I think there's a way of writing, the way that lawyers write and argue, which hides meaning, you know, but I think there's also a way of talking about the law and writing about the law in a way that anyone can understand it, even though they're not a lawyer themselves. So I like writing that is clear and that does not obfuscate or hide meaning.
And yet finding clarity in stories about particular times in Zimbabwe isn't necessarily easy. I mean, I've read your collection, An Elegy for Easterly, and it's incredibly powerful and moving and at times quite brutal. What was it you wanted to do with that collection?
Oh, you know, I look at that book now and I wince, but that book in particular, I don't know, it's, in many ways, I think it's a very angry book. You know, I wrote it out of a sense of rage.
What were you angry about?
I was angry about Zimbabwe, about what had happened to Zimbabwe. I was angry about the fact that in 2006, when I started to write the stories, everything had collapsed. I remember going to Zimbabwe, because I used to go to Zimbabwe every year, and I remember one friend of mine saying to me, "This doesn't feel like home anymore. All the memories of my childhood have disappeared." And I remember feeling that so strongly as well, that you'd go to, like, you know, the places we used to go to as kids, you know, little places like, you know, the Maybrain swimming pool, You know, it's got potholes and everything. And it just felt like it was a different country. And there were people who were responsible for making it that way. And it was them that I was angry with. It was also the people of Zimbabwe that I was angry with. You know, so I was just so helpless with rage. And I started writing these stories. And in fact, the stories were really, the book was an accident because, you know, it wasn't really meant to be a book. I didn't actually set out to write a book of short stories about Zimbabwe. But, you know, the people at my publisher loved the stories and, you know, we thought, you know, why not have this collection while they waited for me to finish the novel? And so that's how the collection came to be written. But I look at those stories now and I think maybe I was too angry. Maybe I wasn't subtle enough. I don't know.
Lawyer and novelist Patina Gupta. She spoke to me, Kate Evans, at this year's Sydney Writers' Festival. And the whole of that discussion will be on Best of the Festivals, right here on RN Summer.